This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
Hello, I'm Dr. Nancy Lottridge-Anderson, president of New Perspectives, a fee-only financial advising firm and co-host of Money Talks. For over 10 years, Money Talks has been answering your personal financial questions and sharing knowledge about money management. Money Talks can be heard Tuesdays at 9 a.m. on MPB Think Radio. Podcasts can be found on our website, money.mpbonline.org, or on your smart device's podcasting platform.
Yeah. Good morning, Carol. It's Deep South Dining on MPB Think Radio.
I'm so glad to hear that song this morning.
Feels good, huh?
It feels good.
Well, good morning to you and to all of our listenership. We are glad you are here. We're going to talk about a lot of things this morning. It's a mixed bag, and we invite our listeners to participate.
Is it paper or plastic?
Could be either.
Yeah, it is a mixed bag today.
Yeah. So you wanted to talk a little bit about some eggs that you cooked last week.
Yeah. And I had posted the French eggs. In French, they are les œufs en coquette. They are eggs that are done in a little pot, a cocotte pot. And it was a recipe that was in the Wall Street Journal last weekend, and my husband asked that I make those, and I did, and I posted it. And it got a lot of interest on cooking and coping, and a bunch of people made the eggs. Our friend Peyton sent a picture on Saturday of the eggs that were on his breakfast table made by Cynthia Jordan in Philly.
That's Philadelphia,
Mississippi. And then lo and behold, yesterday morning, I got a photograph from Paris, France. That's France, not Mississippi or Tennessee. Mm. And Frank and Ivy Alley were sitting in a restaurant yesterday morning, and the couple next to them got these eggs en cocotte, and they were actually cooked at the table. So it's a traditional French dish, but they've even adapted it and taken it a step further. And they were in these wonderful little vessels that had a tiny little burner on them. So we're eating eggs around the world.
Wow. Oofs.
Oofs. Oofs. En cocotte.
Very good.
And you've got some stuff here.
Yeah, I brought you some stuff. Kara made a pie, and it is a cherry pie. But what's unique about it is that it has a streusel crust. Now, I've sent you a text telling you the difference between strudel, as in apple strudel.
Is it Austria, Vienna, Germany?
And streusel.
Strudel.
Streusel.
And share that with our listeners, Malcolm.
Well, apple strudel, you know, is a dessert that's made with a phyllo or a crust, and it's layered. And this streusel is a topping, actually. I know I have this here somewhere because I sent it to you this morning.
It's easy to confuse.
They are easy to confuse the name strudel and streusel, but they are actually different types of dessert. An apple strudel has a thin sheet of pastry wrapped around the filling, while the streusel is a crumbly sweet topping of sugar, flour, and butter that is often layered over pies and cakes. The latter, the streusel, is what Kara put on top of the cherry pie. And this little container here, Carol, in the plastic, is the streusel that she made separately and then applied it to the cherry pie. So,
well, it's absolutely delicious. And
it's an almond streusel, by the way.
Everyone go home and make a cherry pie or an apple pie and put streusel on top.
And this has almonds, but it doesn't have to.
Malcolm, you're a lucky guy to have all these fabulous desserts every week.
Well, and I'm often quite happy to share.
Yes, you are.
You. And sometimes Java gets some, but I see he's not going to make any today. It's going down fast
yeah,
in here.
It hasn't made its way back here in the back yet.
Sorry about that, Java.
We have a little barrier.
Now, Java, you have a question you want to ask, and that is, what is something you do not like that everyone expects you to know because you're from Mississippi? Now, is this something that you get asked often?
Well, I think I saw it on social media or somebody posed a question, but I just wanted to ask this to you guys because, you know, being from Mississippi, Mississippi natives, people have some preconceived notions of things, of, you know, how things are done down here and what you should know about or like or something, like just in general. And this is a good thing. Like, people would probably think you know a lot about the blues because you're from Mississippi,
right,
or something like that. So I didn't know if it was something out there that you probably get in your travels, like, hey, Malcolm, you're from Mississippi, tell me about, and you get, you like, I don't know anything about that.
Well, we can always make it up. So we'll pose the question to our listeners. Is there something that you do not like, or you do like, about being asked about being from Mississippi? Carol, do you have something?
I'm trying to think of something in Mississippi, something in the southern canon, food canon, that I do not like that people would expect.
I know for me, it's chitlins. Or chitterlins, because I mean, I have eaten them before. I don't go around asking for them.
Right.
And, you know, being from Mississippi, people just think, oh, you're from the South, you're from Mississippi, tell me about these chitlins.
Yeah.
I know nothing about them, sir.
Well, I was
it's going, a band.
I was going to say
it's chitlin, a blues band.
But then I thought you were going to accuse me of cultural appropriation.
Oh, no.
Or misappropriation, but I don't like chitlins either.
See, yeah, there you go. But people will assume these things, you know, just because of where you're from.
They're slimy.
And they stink. I just got to go and say it.
I had them one time, and that's what was plenty for me. You know, so people often ask about fried food, if we fry everything. But my favorite is everybody in Mississippi an artist or an athlete? Because
oh, wow.
We produce so many greats.
That's a good one because, you always bump into somebody who's doing something great here in Mississippi.
I'm not crazy about pork rinds, and I know
I was
I'm
gonna
supposed
ask you,
to be.
Yeah. Cornbread, biscuits, you know, dumplings.
Mine is my greens. Like, I'm not the biggest fan of greens, but people will be like, you know you want some beans and some greens and cornbread. You from Mississippi. come on, man.
All right.
Go ahead. We get you got some. I know, but I hope we get some calls on that. I'd like to hear if other people have things that they're supposed to like.
All right. We're going to switch gears from the thing people ask about Mississippi to the upcoming Howell's St. Paddy's Day Festival and St. Patrick's Day approaching March 17, just around the corner. And our newest producer, Marissa, visited Ireland a few years ago, as Carol, you and I did, and she was going to share with us a bit about the famed Irish breakfast that you and I have made a standing joke
on. I know it. We have,
for
because
years.
The first Irish breakfast, we were so jet-lagged.
Right.
And we walked downstairs from the bed and breakfast that we were staying. And
what was that? Dingle. Was that the right town?
Yes, we're in Dingle.
We're in Dingle.
Bay. We're
yes.
in Dingle. And we walked down there. And it was blood sausage, a lot of beans.
Beans, yeah, yeah.
Bacon. It was a lot of stuff.
It was a lot of foods that we just weren't quite ready for. But,
yeah.
But yet our host says,
you must eat the Irish breakfast.
It is famous, she
yes,
said.
Yes, it's a very famous breakfast, and just, you know, was stuffing blood sausage down my throat.
So, Marissa, what was your Irish breakfast experience like?
Well, it certainly wasn't that ominous or whatever. It seems like they kind of forced you into it, huh?
They were very proud of it, and it was one of those things where we were expected to be excited about it, but we were jet-lagged and exhausted. And we.
And she was our host was enthusiastic.
She was over the top with enthusiasm about the Irish traditions, one of which was the breakfast, and she thought we should just be, you know, beside ourselves about it, and we just were sort of half asleep.
Got you. Okay, well, I had to try it. I mean, you're in Ireland. You have to try the big, important traditional meals. And everyone in my group was terrified of the black pudding, but I jumped right in. I didn't think it was too bad.
Carol, do you remember the black pudding?
You know, I do. I remember black pudding, not at our first one. I remember black pudding. I remember blood sausage. And I remember lots and lots of beans and tomatoes.
Yes, right. I think the tomatoes are often fried even for breakfast.
Wow.
Well, I'm looking at something that says what the full Irish breakfast is. It's mushrooms, grilled tomatoes,
yes,
bubble and squeak, baked beans, fried eggs, black pudding,
right,
blood sausage, lots of butter.
Indeed.
And Irish soda bread. So there you go.
Marissa, any other eats that you enjoyed in Ireland? Did you like the pub food, the fish and chips, and the other items that they serve in the pubs?
I had to get the bangers and mash.
Right.
And I had to get fish and chips. But I was studying abroad, so I was living in a flat, and I did a lot of my own cooking.
Okay.
And I was just very impressed by how fresh all of the produce and all of the meat and stuff was, you know.
Yeah.
Everything, you know, I guess because it's such a small place and they're not importing from other places.
Right.
It was just always good.
They eat what they grow there, Carol.
They certainly do, mm-hmm. But I thought you were going to remind me about Bubble and Squeak.
Go ahead.
I do love.
Please speak
love
about
that name.
Bubble and Squeak.
Well, it's potatoes and cabbage fried together.
Ooh, yeah.
And it's one of the great, they call it one of the great peasant dishes of the world.
Excellent. And what about it
just to say the name to order it.
Of course you do. Bubble and Squeak. How about the Irish stew? I love the Irish stew.
Well, you should love it because it's tradition at Howlin' Mouths to have it the week of St. Paddy's Day parade. And your brother made one of the greatest Irish stews. He made it better than they do in Ireland.
We think that, of course.
Well, we do think that.
And we enjoyed, you know, after he passed, which was 11 years ago today, so this is a monumental day for me, but I found in the refrigerator a container of Irish stew that he had put back. And I put it in my freezer and kept it for a long time and served it when Kara and I got married at our rehearsal dinner.
And I was happy to be able to partake with that.
So thank you all for listening to our stories about St. Patrick's Day upcoming on March 17. The parade is on March 23 all over downtown Jackson. Just search or Google how St. Patty's Parade and you can get all the details. This is the 41st year of this parade. We're looking forward to a beautiful day in downtown. We got a caller on the line. Julian from Ocean Springs is on the phone. We'll talk to Julian, see what's going on in his world down at the Walter Anderson Museum
of
Art.
He's probably had a little bubble and squeak along the way.
I would think so. He's a bubble and squeak kind of guy. We'd love to have you join us. It's sort of a mixed bag show, so if something on your mind, if you want to ask questions, share something, this is how you do it. Welcome back to Deep South Dining. Malcolm White, Carol Palmer. Glad you're with us this morning. It's a beautiful springish morning, transitional morning. The seasons, Carol, are slowly changing.
They are indeed.
What are you eating over there, Carol?
I'm eating streusel.
Yeah, what are you eating over there, Carol?
Oh, Java, sorry this isn't coming back to you.
Oh,
okay,
boy.
Okay.
It's just not right.
I'm going to save some cherry pie for you, some cherry. Yes.
She saved you a little wedge over here.
A little slither.
just to get you excited. Okay, we've got a friend of ours on the phone. Julian Rankin is calling in this morning from Ocean Springs. Good morning, Julian. What's happening?
Well, it's cold. I needed something to warm me up, and Mississippi food does that.
There you go. There you go. What's cooking at the Walter Anderson Museum of Art?
Well, plenty, and I mean, I will talk a bit about that, but, as I was waiting, I was hearing y'all speak, and I had some pork rind yesterday. I am a pork rind kind of gentleman.
I can say that. And,
yeah, I mean, they low carb, gets it done, and I think for me, Mississippi food, it's about the high and the low, right? So something you can find at a gas station or a James Beard-nominated restaurant, both are part of the tableau, and so I think that's what makes Mississippi unique.
Yeah, and you're right there on the intersection of both of those. You and I had a great po' boy at a service station last time I was in town. Quavis. No, it wasn't Quavis Brothers. What was it?
It was Fayards.
Fayards.
You get your Fayards and Quavis's mixed up.
Yeah, well, they both make really powerful po' boys. And then we had Carol, you and Julian and I had a beautiful meal at Vestige, just down the street from Fayards.
So we went for the high and the low, but all equally delicious. And Julian, I don't want you to think I was really dissing pork rinds. I mean, my husband eats them in all flavors, and pork rinds have enjoyed a real, period of time now. They're making different people like, what is it, Bougie, the rapper, has a line of pork rinds, and it's kind of become a thing.
Java?
Well, yeah, she's talking about Lil Boosie. I had to think about
Boosie.
It.
Lil Boosie, I'm sorry.
She said, I don't know who the first person was, but Lil Boosie.
Do you know anything about his line of pork rinds?
Well, I know they have, I guess they will fall under the category of the wrap snacks. There's a line of potato chips that have the wrap snacks with different wrappers, and they probably, I guess, Carol, you saw the pork rind version.
Yeah, I've had some of them.
Yeah, no, pork rinds are good. Pork rinds are good. I can get behind that.
I think we should do a show on pork rinds sometime.
I think we're doing one now.
And they come in all different flavors,
famous,
too.
I think Julian will probably know about this and back me up. Famous pork rind producer in Clarksdale, Mississippi, the Kim family, a Chinese family in the Mississippi Delta, has been making pork rinds for years.
Julian, you know about the Kim pork rinds?
Yeah, of course. And I mean, I think that goes back to what we're talking about, which is also the cultural fusion. You're talking about the high and low culture in terms of, gas stations and, white plates. And that's, I think, for us as Mississippians, important to remember our agricultural traditions, the humble, land and dirt and toil that produces these foods. That's what ends up in not just restaurants here, but all over the country. And, you talk about, I used to live in the Delta and then coming out here to the coast. The Vietnamese American tradition, which is so delicious and wonderful. And we talked about Vestige, and that's another really amazing collaboration between our James Beard nominated chef, Alex Perry, and Kumi Omori. So Kumi has her Japanese heritage. Alex is a Southern born chef, and he was inspired by her Japanese heritage and the Japanese technique that he grew up in, and she is a wonderful Southern baker. So I just love how you never can quite pin down what's going to be surprising about Mississippi food, but that's really what it's all about.
Right.
I wanted to bring us back, of course, to the pork rind, but an interesting thing about Kim's in Clarksdale is they make a chicken cracklin. So we can't call them chicken pork rinds, but they're a chicken cracklin, and they do them in different flavors. They do a barbecue flavor, a regular flavor, but it's an operation.
No doubt. Julian, what's your take on pork versus chicken rinds?
I'm definitely, they have these chicken chips and I've had some chicken rinds. I'm a pork guy. I think, not that I'll eat anything you put in front of me, but the old standby, if you just swap me out some saltines or some potato chips and give me some pork rinds, I'll dip it in hummus or whatever you give me. So, I'm gonna stick with the pork and go from there. But I will say, just talking about my experience, in Mississippi and these chefs and traditions we're talking about, I think Nick Wallace is another chef I've worked with in the past at the Mississippi Museum of Art in Jackson before I came down here. And his own experience, it all goes back to the homesteading, his grandparents living in Edwards, Mississippi, on a farm. And I think that the dirt again is, if you don't know what the dirt is, you can't ever, you know, get something clean and composed. You have to know both sides of the story, and that commingling is really exciting to me. But you know, the chicken rinds, you know, there's something, there's a taste to them. I haven't quite come around fully to them. I think I need to go and find some purveyors, do a road trip. We all should probably do that.
All meet in Clarksdale.
A roundabout. Mm-hmm. How about a roundabout?
A roundabout.
Mm-hmm. Java, you in?
Hey, I love that. Let's do it.
A road trip. Yeah, that's good. So, Julian, you mentioned Nick. Can you share a little bit about some of what you two guys are working on?
Sure. Well, like I said, you know, years ago when I was in Jackson at the Mississippi Museum of Art, Nick Wallace was there. And, of course, Nick is one of our celebrated chefs, been on, you know, Top Chef and Chopped and all these wonderful, you know, national and international TV shows, but comes from here and lives here. And he was our culinary curator and executive chef in Jackson way back when. And now he has a restaurant, the Nissan Cafe, at the two Mississippi museums. But the Walter Anderson Museum has expanded its campus. And one of our projects, and this should be coming online, we're getting construction started here soon. It'll be a new restaurant, actually, as part of our campus. And we're working on a concept with Nick called Hen and Egg that would be here at the museum. So as things, you know, continue to develop, it's just like we talked about. Mississippi is a small town. You know, we're bringing people here, not just for visiting, you know, lecturers, chefs, but we're going to have a full-time restaurant here. And the concept is developed by Nick Wallace. So we're really excited because Anderson, Walter Anderson, he was all about the southern landscape and how we can look to nature, and certainly food is a part of that, to give us inspiration and obviously energy. And that fellowship around the shared table is something we've been missing here at the museum. So the food component is on the way.
Wow. Now, aren't you working on another project with Nick, or is it a similar project? It seems like you mentioned
something.
There's a
Jackson, a Hen and Egg location, too. And I think, you know, that is almost ready to be, you know, it's sort of whispers are happening in Jackson.
But top secret.
We should do a show about that soon.
Okay.
But there's a very historic place in Jackson that's coming online again. And Nick Wallace has another Hen and Egg concept. And this Hen and Egg restaurant is our whole motto for it. And I've been working with him along the way to kind of think about the story, because he and I have told stories together for so long about his journey. And it's really about slow food served fast. So that's kind of the concept for what Hen and Egg is. It's these, you know, pickling and homesteading traditions, but made for the modern consumer who needs to get in and out. You know, you only have a certain amount of time for lunch. So how can we really disrupt the fast food and kind of lean into what consumers want, which is a quick bite, but do it in a way that pays homage to the generations of people, you know, the men and women and elders who have passed down these wonderful recipes. And I think that's something that we're really excited about.
Cool. Well, Julia, man, we appreciate you calling in. It's good to hear from you. Thanks for the updates and what all's happening out there on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. We'll see you soon. Thanks again for listening, and thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Well, we got a couple more callers. Java, where we go next?
Let's go to Edward. He wants to talk about, I think, comeback sauce.
Hello, Edward.
We love to talk
Malcolm.
About comeback sauce.
Hey, man.
Malcolm, this is E.T.
E.T. from the Gulf Coast.
You know who I am.
What's happening?
Anyway, Edward Townsend.
Oh, hey, Edward. What's up, brother? I was thinking of an Edward on the coast. How you doing?
Well, I was down in Pasco Christiane, but I'm back here for now, but I'm going back. But anyway, how can I make some comeback dressing as good as they do with the Mayflower? How do they do that?
Well, they've got a secret recipe, you know.
How do you think they do it?
Well, I mean, basic comeback, you know, is, as you know, is mayonnaise, garlic, tomato sauce. A lot of people use ketchup, but I think that tomato sauce is the best. But I don't know what all they put in there. You know, each and every restaurant tweaks theirs just ever so slightly to kind of make it their very own. Some people make it hot, put a lot of cayenne or hot sauce in it. I do not believe the Mayflower does that. But the truth is, Edward, I don't know, because their recipe is not only, I think, trademarked, but I also think it has been given to some of the family, and that it is, you know, a property that they do not share. So anyway, I really don't know, but I've eaten a lot of it. I know.
I know. I could have some.
What about did Hal used to make that kind of dressing?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah, we made our own comeback.
That's a secret recipe, too.
Well, they're all considered secret just because, you know, it's sort of your little trade secrets and you want to, you know, separate yourself from everyone else. But if you need a recipe, I will send you a recipe. I have a sort of stock standard. You know, this recipe originated at the Five Points at the Rotisserie in Jackson by Alec Dennery. And, of course, Dennery's had a fabulous version of it. Fisherman's Wharf had a great version. The People's Cafe had a great version of it, and on and on and on. But I've got probably a dozen recipes for different styles of comeback.
Look, you can put that on anything.
Yeah, it goes on everything.
It goes on saltine crackers well.
Yes, and seafood.
Well, it goes on a piece of, like, redfish, okay?
Yeah, it does.
Absolutely.
But the reason that Hal and Mal's has it in little nut cups now is because we used to go in there and take the bottles and dump it all over saltine crackers and call it a meal.
That's right. And eat the whole thing.
You were ripping off a Hal and Mal.
Yep.
In a loving way.
Yeah.
I was in there the other day. I saw Chris Gill the other day playing his old place.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris played the club over the weekend. He's one of my faves.
Yeah, it was killer. Yeah, man, I love a recipe. Look, can you buy any of that stuff anywhere?
Yeah, I think Crichel's sells their recipe.
Theirs
in
good, too.
They
theirs
sell
really
theirs
good
in local restaurants.
And
you can
in
go to the Mayflower.
Stores.
You can go to the Mayflower, and they will sell you a bottle. But I don't think they have it packaged for general consumption at grocery stores.
And I've seen Crichel's sauce lately at all the corner markets, and they're corner markets all over the state.
The problem we had in packaging it was we couldn't get the flavor of the fresh tomatoes and fresh garlic by using powdered. It just never tasted the same. It was the juice of the onion and the juice of the garlic that really, what we thought, made it special. So we never could figure out how to mass produce and package and sell that stuff. But anyway, Edward, thanks a million for calling. Thanks for listening. It's good to hear from you. Take care of yourself, and appreciate the question about comeback. We'll continue to take callers. We appreciate each and every one of you. We'll talk more about springtime and farmer markets. Carol, you know a little.
I do love a farmer's market.
You do love a farmer's market. Welcome back to Deep South Dining. Malcolm White, Carol Palmer, Java Chapman. How you doing, Java Chapman?
I'm doing fine, Malcolm White.
Java has come in on the other side of the glass because he's trying to move closer to the cherry pie.
He's easing on in.
Well, see, I didn't have those specific motives, but I will take the spoils.
Now, you've been on the road. Did you eat anything good on your little recent trip?
Yeah, my birthday was Saturday, so we went to Louisiana, one of my favorite places on earth. Don't laugh at me, Dave and Buster's.
Dave and Buster's.
Yeah, Dave and Buster's. And it turned into a real quick family trip. So we had big fun out there and, you know, always trying to find something good to eat. It was, if anybody out there in Baton Rouge knows about Simple Joe Cafe, please tell me why the line was so long. Because
must be something going on.
We were on the search for some shrimp and grits, and Crystal, she read a review and said, I'm going to keep it short and sweet. These are the best grits, shrimp and grits in the universe. And when we got there, the line was so long we couldn't even eat. So I guess it was true. But we went to just another family style restaurant, went to Copeland's, and was pleasantly surprised about their shrimp and grits.
In a good way?
In a very good way. You know, I
pleasantly.
Mean,
okay.
Well, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, and I was, you know, it's just a chain restaurant or whatnot, but I was pleasantly surprised. And then it got me thinking about shrimp and grits as far as like just a dish in general. It's a southern thing, but it started out in South Carolina.
That's right, low country.
Yeah, low country. So I took a little deep dive the other day on shrimp and grits, and I just was like, this is great. It's recently became like a real national type of dish.
Yeah.
But you know, started out South Carolina, migrated throughout the rest of the South, and you know, now in New Orleans has its own style, and you can find them pretty much anywhere.
But you had good ones.
I had good ones. It was, okay. I think what really made it all set it off was like a barbecue style kind of sauce with cheese grits and some
had some Worcestershire
and
in there.
Yeah, there we go. And the andouille.
Can't go wrong with andouille.
It was all good. It was
our
all
friend
good.
John Currents at City Grocery is well known for his shrimp and grits, and that's one of my favorites. And Natalie Dupree, who we all know, who is a great Southern chef and cooking school instructor, and really she started the Rich's Department Store Cooking School back in the 70s. So that woman knows how to cook. But she wrote a whole book on shrimp and grits.
With over like 80 different styles of shrimp and grits.
That's you have that book?
No, I do. And of course I'll bring it.
It really opened my eyes about it. You know, you wonder how dishes get started and stuff like that. But I'm a shrimp and grits fanatic in a little bit.
And I think John Currents was inspired by the great chef Bill Neal in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, Crook's Corner, who is sadly no longer with us and had very way too short life. But he was so seminal in taking the Southern food of the past and reinterpreting it in the present, and that was one of his great dishes. But Java, I'm sure you'll be making it at home.
Yeah, it's on my list. It's not a hard dish to make, but there are different ways to play with it, and I think I'm gonna jump head first into it.
Well, I like it that you've already staked your claim that you prefer cheese grits under your shrimp and grits.
I don't know what other way there is now.
That's a good way to be.
Yeah,
I mean, they do
regular,
make them with regular
grits.
There's cream grits, regular grits, and cheese grits, garlic cheese grits. I mean, you know, there's a million ways to dance with the grit. But I'm with you. I like the cheese when I'm doing the shrimp and grits. I don't know if y'all have noticed, but a stray has entered the
There's somebody came in the
studio with an empty container. Bill Ellison, what's up, buddy?
He's coming for the pie.
I'm coming after the pie. I haven't ambushed a radio show in a long time. This is the first time that I can remember.
You hadn't done this since your ZZQ days.
Yeah, ZZQ days. We ambushed each other a lot. But so I apologize by just walking in the door here. But I wanted to bring Malcolm back. Y'all are covering a lot of ground today. Pork rinds to cheese grits to comeback. And it's all good and very interesting.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring Malcolm back his Rubbermaid little dish here and just tell the listeners, if Malcolm ever offers you a piece of pie that his wife made, don't say no. It was delicious. Did y'all get some?
We're sitting here eating
it as we speak.
I thought that might be what y'all were eating.
Actually, Java crashed at the studio because Malcolm
I'm usually behind the board, but I had to come get my piece.
It's worth it.
We're having cherry pie with streusel.
Streusel.
Okay.
Crust.
We thought that's why you were here.
Yep, it is. Lynn, Malcolm offered me some ice cream when he gave me the pie yesterday.
It was a cream topping.
Cream top. Yeah.
Well, I got my own.
Yeah, we had ours at home, and soon as I got home from your house, Malcolm, we split it and ate it. Put the cream topping on it. It was delicious. So tell Kara thanks.
Yeah, Malcolm, you are so generous with food. I'm not that generous.
Yeah, you got to share the wealth.
Well, I'll leave you guys along. You sound great.
Well, thanks for coming in and visiting with us.
Yeah.
And thanks for bringing back my my plastic container.
There you go.
That's what I say. Returning the Rubbermaid, that's like that's a true.
This is how you get it replenished.
That's a true.
You don't bring
it
back, you don't
right
get
there.
Any more.
Yeah, there you go.
And like I say, if Malcolm offers you food, take him up on it. It was great. Carry on.
All right, we've got a caller on the phone. We've got one of our old buddies, Kathleen from Osaka. Hello, Kathleen. How are you?
I feel like I'm taking a trip to New Orleans listening to the show.
There we go.
I've been laughing with y'all and some of the places in my mind where we stop for this, stop for that. But Malcolm, you said something that is such a tip. Kudos to you. When you say you chopped up or put the onions or garlic through the little food processor, save the juice. Don't throw it out. Because there's a tip when you make a hamburger to go on the grill, you want some chopped onions in it. You use that juice in there and you bind it and you season the outside. Of course, you season it a little through, but more on the outside. It really does make an excellent burger. And, Carol, I've got a question for you. I had talked to the Fix-It 101 crew at the home show. They were talking about cleaning the vents to the stove. Everybody. Malcolm, you've worked commercially in restaurants so long, you know that's not a pleasant job.
No.
So to stop it a little, I called and told them about a splatter screen. They were going, a splatter screen? Like it came from another world, you know? And I know Carol was in all that when she had her shop.
Indeed.
Maybe she could help them see people my age, 73 now, and then you've got the younger kids coming up that never cooked. They don't use it. I use it to sort of prevent the splatters going up to the fan.
Right.
So, but you can clean the screen a lot easier. Now, it's not going to stop it, but it may cut it down and make it a little easier on yourself to keep that hood clean.
Yeah, Kathleen, this is a great point. I hadn't really thought about splatter screens or seen them around too much anymore, but it's a great kitchen tool. They are a round screen.
On a stainless steel handle.
With a handle, plastic, stainless steel or whatever, that you actually lay on top of your pan when you're frying.
Right. Keeps the splatter and the grease from going
on. Yeah, and you usually find them like in 8-inch, 10-inch, or 12-inch skillets.
They look like a giant fly swat.
Yes, it looks...
That's a visual.
Okay, Malcolm, but what a great tip.
I have one at my house, and I use it all the time. It helps keep the stove clean when you're splattering. Anyway, great tip. Two great tips, the onion binder for hamburgers from Kathleen and the using the splatter screen.
When she called up Fix-It 101 a couple of Saturdays ago live at the home show, and everybody did have kind of like a blank look on their face, like splatter screen.
Yeah.
But there you
that's
go.
Great. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much for calling. We appreciate you. You know, Carol, it is springtime, and the farmers markets are starting to be the place to be on Saturday mornings for me and other days for other people. And I'm particularly jazzed about the Louisiana strawberries that are starting to show up.
Gosh, they came early.
They did come early. They had an early crop this year. I don't know exactly why. I'm not a weatherman, but anyway, they're out there. And in fact, I had a new item on the LV's lunch menu. It is a salad with shrimp, Java.
Okay.
And Beretta cheese. And Louisiana strawberries, and it was divine. And Carol, I wonder if you could share with our listeners about
a Beretta.
Beretta, I said Beretta. Sorry, I was thinking about
Scott Beretta.
Beretta.
Yeah. Beretta cheese. It's an Italian cow's milk cheese, and it's made with both cream and mozzarella. And we can get it now in our local grocery stores. But anybody who is down in New Orleans, you know, stop by the St. James Cheese Shop. They have, their burrata is fresh and extra creamy. And I love to bring that home from New Orleans.
And while you're there, get a flat of strawberries and share with
us.
On
the road.
On the side of the road.
Yeah.
I love stomping on the side of the road and buying strawberries.
What about shrimp on the side of the road?
I've done that as well.
Okay.
But we have a shrimp vendor. We have a fishmonger who comes to Jackson every Thursday and Friday.
Yeah, John Lester at Dugan's,
who we've had on the show a bunch
great
of times.
Source.
I see the line.
You know, when
there's a reason there's a line.
Talking about farmers markets, I was one of the people. We started a farmer's market in Greenwood some years ago now that is very successful, and the city's even made a permanent little shed for it. But one of the things that kind of tickled me when we first did it was shrimp, because I kind of take shrimp for granted growing up around the coast, and mm-hmm. we can get it in Jackson, but in other parts of the state you can't get like big vats of shrimp. And we would have somebody that would drive down every week and get several ice chests of shrimp. And people would come like an hour before the market opened
right.
and line up just to get shrimp.
Well, I would think getting fresh shrimp, Gulf shrimp, in the Delta is a big deal.
It was a big deal.
I remember when we lived in Boonville, and we would go visit family down on the coast and bring back shrimp. We were very popular. Very popular.
When I lived in Peoria, Illinois.
Peoria.
Peoria. I was very popular because my brothers would bring up a big ice chest of shrimp once a year, and you know, we'd have a shrimp boil. Even way back then, shrimp was $20 a pound in Illinois. But
speaking of expensive seafood...
Uh-oh.
The crawfish.
What's going on with the crawfish?
It's
We're going to have
Malcolm.
A whole show about crawfish and this whole price explosion. And rare, and they're very tough to get this year. They had terrible problems with the weather, and they're small, and they're expensive. Someone told me they're like $9.95 a pound in a...
And they're little babies.
And they're little bitty things.
Yeah.
We're going to have to get someone on here to talk about the crawfish and...
Yeah, we do, because it's a crisis.
There's a crawfish crisis.
Do you think it was related to the drought, or is
the
that
drought,
one of the things
flood,
we're going to have to...
The freeze, everything.
Mm.
I think it was a combo. It was the deadly weather combo that really affected them. But we'll get someone on here who's an expert in that arena, and we can talk about the plight of the crawfish this year.
I'll just leave you with this. There is, if you go online, there is a crawfish calculator.
What?
There's a crawfish calculator online, and you can put in, like, how many people you're going to have for a crawfish boil. It tells you how many.
Oh.
And it also tells you, based on the price of that day.
What's the price today?
What you're going to spend. I'll calculate while we take our next call.
You calculate. All right, we do have another caller on the phone. Mikey from Mobile. We haven't heard from you in a while. Hey, Mikey, what's up?
Hey, it's good to hear from everybody, and especially, I always love it when Kathleen calls in because she is so practical, you know? Her tips are so useful. And I've shared that one that she gave, the splatter screen, and I heard the Fix-It show. You know, it's like, and I thought, these people ain't getting it, you know, at all. So I'm glad she called and explained. You know, it's like, I have two of them, and they really do work. They really do help. And it's a really easy rinse, which is leading to what I called in to recommend. You were talking at the opening of the show about things that people expect from Southerners that, you know, it just kind of makes you want to look at them and go, what?
All right, what you got, Mikey?
Put it on us.
A dish pan, you know. I lived at that time it was a group house. You were young people. You needed to live together because rents, kind of like now, you know, rents were so unaffordable if you didn't. And, one of the folks that I lived with, she was a really sweet gal. We were really good friends. In fact, I worked for her. She was manager for the American Society of Pension Actuaries, and I worked for her as a temp on a project. But, I mean, we were good friends as well as being cohabitors, you know, in this house.
Roommates.
But one day I was washing dishes, and she went, well, now I know you're a Southerner. She was from Ohio. Now I know you're a Southerner because you use a dishpan to wash dishes.
Yeah, there you go. A dishpan to wash your dishes in the sink.
I mean, is it more basic than that? You know, it's like
I used one yesterday and last night.
I don't use a dishpan because I'm a Southerner. I use a dishpan because to me it makes much more ecological sense.
There you go.
And it's a lot easier if you got different stuff. I don't use the same dishwater for everything. If you want to change out the water without draining stuff, you just pick up a dishpan and you move it over the counter, right? It seems pretty practical to me.
Absolutely. So Mikey's recommending a dishpan,
I'm with it. I also
like a dishwasher.
It's not like a Southern thing. Oh, you wouldn't think it's like a Southern thing, you know.
I got you.
But it's just like when you go to different places, is it soda or is it pop?
Right.
Oh, it's pop in Wisconsin.
It's neither to me.
Bring me a pop.
We call them all Cokes, you know.
Yeah, everything's a Coke here.
Even though they're not.
or a cold drink. It's a bunch
soda
of
water.
Soda water, yes.
You know, there used to be an old man that I used to hang out with, and he called them belly washers.
He paid me one of them belly washers.
You know, our listeners are so on top of things. I was just, you know, after Kathleen talked about the splatter screen,
right.
There is an article in Food and Wine magazine this month
About the splatter screen.
Kathleen's on top of things.
I know,
yeah.
She
and
is
so
our
is Mikey.
Yeah.
You know, the dishpan. Bring back the dishpan. Anyway, those are great. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. We always appreciate hearing from our listeners. Carol, what else you got? You got anything else going on over there?
No, but I'd like to know, Malcolm, what you're doing at your house with Louisiana strawberries. Anything different this year? Just pie?
I like putting them in salads. I like putting them on toast, making a sort of a strawberry toast, if you would.
Have you ever made strawberry jam?
No, I have not, but I've eaten a lot of homemade strawberry jam.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about.
Is strawberry like you guys' sign of spring?
To me, it's one of them.
Yeah, that's I'm the same
way. St. Patty's Day. Strawberries.
When the strawberries come out,
the Japanese magnolias.
The springtime.
It's the beginning of spring.
The
daffodils.
Interesting strawberry dishes I have ever had. It was something that the great chef Giuliano Bugiali from Italy taught at the Everyday Gourmet many years ago. And when I was typing the recipe up, I was going, God, this sounds awful. It was strawberries with balsamic vinegar and a sprinkling of black pepper. It is the most delicious thing. I mean, it has to be good balsamic vinegar.
Mm-hmm. The salad that I referenced earlier, the new salad on the menu at Elvie's has a balsamic basil dressing on top of the shrimp.
Really?
The burrata and the strawberries. That salad. It comes tossed in this balsamic. Anyway, it's delish.
It sounds delicious. I wish they were open Mondays.
Yeah.
Because we could go right now and have brunch.
We could go straight ahead. But they do have this, as I said, they got this new menu with four or five new items on it. One of them is a crawfish, some sort of crawfish po' boy or crawfish sandwich. I can't remember now what it is. But it's an interesting way to use the crawfish. I think it's fried crawfish on some sort of a dish. But anyway,
well, they're so
in season.
Pricey
whether
this year. Yeah, I mean, may have to pay a little more. But last year, Leanne Galt and I made a crawfish pie, and it was so delicious and a thing of wonder. Java has his lip poked.
It's
a traditional Louisiana
jambalaya
dish.
Crawfish pie, mayo,
filet gumbo. It's a savory pie.
But just when you
don't
say
worry.
Pie, when
no,
you say pie, instantly
yeah,
go to
no
like what Malcolm
cream.
Brought in this morning.
Different,
you know.
Yeah, very different.
But I'm with it. I can dig.
But delish.
I believe. I know.
It's very delicious. Well, we're looking forward to all things spring. Planting a few things in the garden and fresh herbs, fresh vegetables, farmer markets. It's going to be good. It's just around the corner, Carol.
And before we leave, I do want to send a little tip out for our listeners to stay tuned to Deep South Dining because Sip and Savor, which is coming up in Meridian on April the 6th, we're going to be giving away some tickets.
Ah.
So you have to tune in for your chance to win tickets.
Call in to win.
Sip and Savor in Meridian on April 6th.
There you go. And I may drive over there. I haven't decided yet. Perhaps we should.
Well, you have to put you on the billboard.
Malcolm, oh no,
appearance by Malcolm White.
No. Happy to be one of many. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's our episode of Deep South Dining for today. We are a production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting's Think Radio. We are funded by the generous contributions from listeners like yourself, and we thank you. Our show is produced by Java Chapman and Marissa Vaughn. For my co-host, Carol Palmer, I am Malcolm White. We ask that you now please stay tuned for Marshall Ramsey's program, followed by Southern Remedy at 11. And we ask that you join us every Monday morning and every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. right here on MPB Think Radio. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.